Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Treasury yields rise as Jerome Powell rejects the idea of a rate cut.
Our policy stance is appropriate right now. We don't see a strong case for moving in either direction.
Up next, we get a policy decision from the Bank of England.
Plus, earnings from Qualcomm renew concerns of a smartphone slowdown.
Attorney General William Barr says he won't show up today before the House Judiciary Committee after yesterday's tense appearance before a Senate panel. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Islanders lost at Carolina. They trailed the series 3-0. The Mets lost in the ninth inning to Cincinnati. The Yankees lost at Arizona.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are gaining this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 7 points, Dow futures up 46, NASDAQ futures up 22. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%, CAC in Paris down 0.3%, and the FTSE 100 is little changed. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 2.52%, yield on the 2-year 2.32%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.7% or 46 cents to $63.14 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 1% on $12.50 to $12.71.70 an ounce. The euro 1.1208 against the dollar. The yen 111.52. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with the Federal Reserve and Chairman Jerome Powell rejecting the idea that an interest rate cut is on the way.
We do think our policy stance is appropriate right now. We don't see a strong case for moving in either direction.
Powell says inflation will rebound and the economy will stay healthy without more help from policymakers. Dennis Lockhart is former president of the Atlanta Fed.
I would be surprised if there's much of a move in terms of policy, perhaps for several months, unless you see a real change in how the economy is performing.
Treasury yields rose. Stocks fell following Powell's remarks as traders pull back on bets for a rate cut. Still, though, Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard says dovish policy is inflating risk assets.
There is some point where, you know, this long period of accommodation has to become concerning to the stability to the financial system when the Federal Reserve does eventually face a recession in the future.
Powell repeatedly played down the threat of weak inflation, saying it may be due to transitory factors.
We have another central bank decision on the way today. Though the Bank of England is not expected to change policy, we will get updated economic forecasts and a news conference from Governor Mark Carney. Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Horn-Dern reports from our London newsroom.
Today is their first chance to gauge this new Brexit extension, and this rate path is really dependent on the outcome of what happens at Westminster. Bloomberg Economics remains skeptical that they'll do any sort of rate hike while Brexit solution remains elusive. So that would mean that Governor Carney won't hike rates again before he steps down in January.
While no hike is expected, analysts will look for evidence of a hawkish tilt in the BOE's latest minutes. Remarks from Mark Carney will also be key. We'll bring you that live on Bloomberg Radio and Television at 7:30 a.m. Wall Street time.
Meantime, we're getting another round of bank earnings out of Europe. Lloyds is reporting results that missed estimates. The British bank blames one-time costs related to compensating missold insurance customers and moving its wealth business. Shares of Lloyds are down nearly 1% in London.
In France, BNP Paribas is reporting a big jump in fixed income trading. Chief Financial Officer Lars Macanel.
Fixed income is bearing the fruit of the changes that we have applied. So we have digitalized. We've also created the joint venture capital markets to really help people needing to issuance, investors. We brought them together and we borne the fruit of that.
Shares of BNP Paribas are up more than 3% in Paris.
Shares of Royal Dutch Shell are higher by more than 1% after its natural gas business led a strong first quarter performance. Bloomberg's Sam Unstead has more from London.
Shell beat by quite a long way. I mean, their first quarter earnings were ahead of even the top analyst estimate, so it was a very, very good quarter. I think a lot of the questions actually may well turn now to whether Shell is going to start to use that cash to go after some M&A.
M&A is in focus in the oil patch, with Chevron and Occidental locked in a bidding war for Anadarko Petroleum.
Shares of Volkswagen are up 4% in Frankfurt. First quarter profit at VW rose, and the automaker expects to meet its annual earnings goal despite a global market slowdown.
Here in the U.S., shares of Qualcomm are down more than 4%. The company gave a lackluster sales forecast, citing weaker demand for smartphones in China. Bloomberg's Abigail Doolittle has details.
If you look at that third quarter guidance, the handset business, the core business, is weaker, really kind of matching some of the expectations that they've been talking about in terms of declining movement there. They're all about the high-end handsets. So the high-end handsets for Qualcomm really not doing very well.
The disappointing outlook overshadows the end of a legal dispute with Apple, which will pay Qualcomm as much as $4.7 billion as part of a settlement.
Shares of Square are down more than 5% after the company issued a disappointing forecast, Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports.
Its cash register and payments processing businesses are seeing increasing competition. Square projected adjusted revenue will be $545 million to $555 million, below estimates of $556.6 million. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Charlie. And in Asia today, economic data was in focus for traders while markets in Japan and mainland China were closed for a holiday. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. A raft of PMIs in the region were released, showing a differing picture of how Asia is holding up in the worries of a global slowdown. South Korea's PMI hit a six-month high, while readings for Taiwan, Indonesia and Philippines dropped from March. Chipmakers pushed South Korea's KOSPI and Taiwan's TAIEX indexes higher, while Hong Kong stocks rose, but Chinese stocks listed in the city fluctuated. And the yen fell, while commodity currencies like the Aussie and Kiwi rose amid news reports a US-China trade deal could be announced by next Friday. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. S&P futures are higher, up 6.5 points this morning. Dow futures up 48 and NASDAQ futures up about 23. 10-year Treasury down 8/32, yield 2.52%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.32%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.8%, down 53 cents to $63.08 a barrel. And COMEX gold down 1%. It's at $1,271.70 an ounce. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here right on time to tell us what's happening around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Attorney General William Barr says he's not coming to today's House Judiciary Committee following yesterday's testy Senate exchange with the Mueller report. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The House Committee Rules has staff attorneys doing some of the questioning today, and after the Senate, well, Mr. Barr's decided not to attend. House Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler.
If good faith negotiations don't result in a pledge of compliance in the next day or two, the next step is seeking a contempt citation against the Attorney General.
Nadler says the committee will convene this morning as scheduled. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Yesterday, members of the Senate Judiciary Committee questioned Barr about a letter written by Special Counsel Robert Mueller following the completion of his report. Democratic Senator and presidential candidate Kamala Harris asked Barr if he looked at the underlying evidence in the Mueller report before concluding there was no evidence of a crime. Barr said he did not.
I think you've made it clear that you've not looked at the evidence. We can move on. I think you've made it clear, sir, that you've not looked at the evidence, and we can move on.
There are calls for Barr to resign, but President Trump says the AG did a fantastic job in front of the panel. The president spoke on the Fox Business Network.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. He's an outstanding man. He's an outstanding legal mind, and I heard he was really, he performed incredibly well.
The president noted that three of the senators who questioned Barr are presidential candidates and accused them of ranting and raving like lunatics. A standoff drags on in Venezuela between President Nicolas Maduro and opposition leader Juan Guaido, who has called for a widespread military uprising. Citizens heeded Guaido's call to fill the streets yesterday, but they were dispersed by security forces with tear gas. Friends and family are remembering a North Carolina college student who police say died attacking a gunman in his classroom as a hero. Police say 21-year-old Riley Howell saved lives at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Howell and another student died in the shooting. Four other students were hurt. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, the Islanders began the Stanley Cup playoffs with a surprising sweep of the Penguins, and now they are on the verge of getting swept. A 5-2 loss at Carolina. It was closer than that. Tied midway through the third period, a Robin Leonard misplay in net led to a Justin Williams goal. Hurricanes put two into an empty net. Final was 5-2 over Barry Trotz's Islanders.
You know, they got the goal. We had tried to get one at the end, and it didn't happen. That's been the series. You know, it's been a break, missed opportunity, and lo and behold, we're sitting in a big hole right now.
Facing elimination tomorrow, the Hurricanes, quite a story. Their first playoff in a decade. They lost the first two games in Washington in the first round, but they are 7-1 since. Dallas beat St. Louis 4-2 to tie that series at 2. NBA Portland beat Denver. That series tied at 1. For Jacob DeGrom, it was like old times. He was terrific, and the Mets didn't score any runs for him. And when light-hitting Jose Iglesias homered off Edwin Diaz in the ninth inning, the Reds won 1-0. But DeGrom, shaky in his last few outings, threw 7 scoreless innings, allowed only 3 hits.
I definitely felt better out there. You know, like I said before, I didn't think I was that far off. Just rushing a little bit to the plate. And, you know, tonight I was able to locate a lot better than the previous 3.
Mets back to 500 as they host the Reds this afternoon. The Yankees are back home tomorrow. They finished the road trip 6-3. 2 losses at Arizona, beaten by the Diamondbacks 3-2. Masahiro Tanaka took the loss. Luke Voit with a home run. Omaha Beach was considered the favorite to win Saturday's Kentucky Derby. Now he's been scratched for health reasons. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, and speaking of sports to bet on, football's championship game may have been super, but gamblers in New Jersey dug deeper into their wallets for college basketball's national championship tournament. More than $106 million were bet in New Jersey on the NCAA tournament, 3 times the amount bet on the Super Bowl. Bets on the College Hoops tournament brought in $10.8 million in revenue for New Jersey sportsbook operators. Futures pointing to a higher open once again on Wall Street. S&P futures up nearly 8 points right now. Dow futures up 57 points. NASDAQ futures up 26. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And at nearly 5:12 on Wall Street, straight ahead, we look at the Fed's patient stance and talk of transitory low inflation. David Rosenberg, chief economist at Gluskin Sheff, joins us next. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures moving higher this morning with S&P futures up 8.5 points, Dow futures up 62, NASDAQ futures up 28. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%, 10-year Treasury down 9/32, yield 2.53%, yield on the 2-year 2.33%. NYMEX crude oil down about 0.9% or 55 cents to $63.05 a barrel. COMEX gold down 1%, down $12.70 to $12.71.50 an ounce. The euro at 1.1212 against the dollar. The yen 111.55. And almost 50 companies in the S&P 500 scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. Attorney General William Barr has informed lawmakers on the House Judiciary Committee that he will skip today's hearing called to review Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. Yesterday, Barr testified in a contentious appearance before a Senate panel. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is facing a court hearing over a U.S. request to extradite him for allegedly conspiring to hack a Pentagon computer. In the NHL playoffs, the Islanders are on the brink of elimination after losing to the Hurricanes 5-2. Carolina leads the series 3-0. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost along with the Nationals. The Red Sox down the A's. The Orioles split a doubleheader. The Giants won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:19 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. David Rosenberg is our guest this morning, chief economist at Gluskin Sheff. The morning after the latest Fed policy decision, Chairman Powell holding firm on the patient stance. David, what's your takeaway?
Well, my take is that, the Fed in the statement acknowledged that core inflation had been declining and below their target. That was new. So that comes as a surprise to them. But what Jay Powell seemed to do was take what was construed as a dovish statement and then kiboshed it in the press conference when he said that his belief was that it was temporary. I would take the other side of that bet. I remember Janet Yellen a couple of years ago also telling us that the weakness in core inflation was temporary. And here we are today, just a couple of years later, and back decisively below 2%. So I think the surprise for the Fed is going to be twofold. I think that their bullish prognosis on the economy in the second half of the year is going to be put to the test. And I think that core inflation is going to continue to drift lower because from my analysis, aggregate demand growth is running below aggregate supply growth. That's going to cause underlying inflation to continue to drift lower and be the big surprise, I think, for the markets and for the Fed between now and the end of the year.
So then you don't think the market was wrong in pricing in a rate cut as soon as it has?
I didn't think that the market was wrong pricing in a rate cut. I think if you look at the historical record on this thing, when the Fed presses the pause button for an elongated period of time after a tightening cycle, the next move is actually to cut interest rates. When the Fed cuts interest rates, and look, you don't need a recession for this. They cut rates aggressively in 1986. They cut rates in 1995. Late 2002 into mid-2003, the Fed cut rates twice. We were a year and a half out of recession. So you don't even need a recession call for the Fed to lower the funds rate. And so they're going to move. If they're going to move at all, they're going to move more than once. So I think if anything, the market's not priced for enough Fed easings, say call it over the course of the next year. So my fundamental belief, and this will be the surprise to people that think the U.S. economy is in such fundamentally great shape, that things are going to be weakening in the course of the next 12 months, and the Fed is going to cut interest rates. I'll say one more thing. The Fed has let everybody believe that neutral Fed funds rate is around, say, 2.5%, 2.75%. The short-term neutral Fed funds rate is about 75, 100 basis points below that level. So I think when we come out of the wash, as we always do, and we look with the benefit of history, we're going to say, aha, once again, the Fed over-tightened this cycle. That's the one thing I think that the president's economics team is probably right on, that the Fed did overstep the bounds for only the 10th time in the past 50 years.
So is there politics at play here then? I mean, if the Fed had gone ahead with signaling a rate cut sooner, I mean, could it be seen as sort of capitulating to the president on his repeated calls for rate cuts?
Well, you know, I don't think that politics is playing a role here. My sense is that, you know, Jay Powell drew a line in the sand and said, oh, well, you know, we're not just looking at, say, the core PC deflator. We're looking at a range of indicators telling us that this decline in core inflation could be temporary. So he brought up to a lot of people outside of the market an arcane statistic, which is the Dallas trim mean inflation series, the Dallas Fed series, which basically strips out the extremes on the low end and the high end, and that stuck around 2%. I think that's all well and good. My sense is, though, it comes down to the economy. You focus on two curves, aggregate demand, aggregate supply. I think anybody that buys into the 3.2% GDP number, which was influenced by excess inventories and a decline in imports, statistically adding to GDP, the key number in the GDP number on Friday, last Friday, was real final sales in the private sector, 1.3%. We have a good feel for the supply side is growing somewhere close to 2%. So I'm not looking at the Dallas trim mean and looking at some arcane statistic. I'm looking at the underlying pressures between supply and demand. And I would say that, you know, maybe Jay Powell and the Fed is very bullish on the outlook for the second half of the year on the demand side. I'm not. So I see disinflationary pressures building in the next 6 to 12 months on top of a core inflation rate that's already below target. And that will lead the Fed to cut interest rates. So, no, I don't think this is about political. I think it really comes down to, you know, Jay Powell having a certain forecast. And my forecast happens to be different than his. So yeah. I have to place a bet down. And my bet is that they will be actually cutting rates past the second half of the year.
Only about 30 seconds left here, David. We got the our April jobs report coming out tomorrow. Your expectations there?
Well, I'm probably close to I'll call it 125 to 150,000 if you give me a bit of a range. So I am, say, a little below consensus. I certainly don't have a negative number in there. I'm not saying that a recession is this quarter or next quarter. I do see it happening by the end of the year. And employment is usually the last thing that tends to go down as recessionary pressures build. But my sense is a below consensus number, and my advice would be to dig beneath the surface. Focus on the household survey, which tends to get short shrift, but that tends to be a better indicator of turning points of the economy than the payroll survey.
Okay.
And also pay attention to the work week, pay attention to manufacturing.
Gotta leave it there. Thank you, David Rosenberg, Chief Economist, Gluskin Sheff. Always appreciate your insights on Bloomberg Daybreak. Really appreciate you joining us. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest Checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit nycb.com for details.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are gaining following yesterday's Fed-related sell-off. Chairman Jerome Powell rejecting the idea that an interest rate cut is on the way.
We do think our policy stance is appropriate right now. We don't see a strong case for moving in either direction.
Fed fund futures show no chance of a rate hike for the rest of the year and about a 50% chance of a cut in December.
We get another policy decision this morning, this one from the Bank of England. Bloomberg's Lucy Meakin reports from London.
Bank of England policymakers look set to take a cautious approach to interest rate changes during the UK's Brexit delay. With continued uncertainty outweighing the evidence of resilience in the economy, analysts say officials will hold their benchmark at 0.75%. Economists are on the lookout for evidence of a hawkish tilt in the minutes, with some seeing one of the nine officials pushing for an immediate hike. In London, Lucy Meakin, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Lucy, thank you. On the earnings front, shares of BNP Paribas are up more than 3%. The French lender reported the biggest fixed income trading jump of all U.S. and European banks in the first quarter.
Shares of Royal Dutch Shell are up more than 2%. First quarter earnings beat even the highest analyst estimate as its natural gas business led a strong performance.
Volkswagen shares are up more than 4%. The German carmaker says it'll meet its annual earnings goal despite a global market slowdown.
Here in the U.S., Qualcomm shares are down 4% following its earnings report. We get more from Emily Chang from our 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
The chipmaker disclosed in its quarterly earnings report that the iPhone maker will pay them up to $4.7 billion. That's less than the $7 billion Qualcomm claimed Apple owed in legal documents. Excluding this one-time payment, the revenue forecast for the current quarter fell short of analyst estimates. Qualcomm CEO Steve Mollenkopf told Bloomberg that's in part due to weaker demand for smartphones expected in China. In San Francisco, I'm Emily Chang, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Emily, thank you. Shares of Square down more than 5.5%. The company gave a disappointing forecast for second quarter revenue as its cash register and payments processing businesses see increasing competition. Right now, futures are moving higher. S&P futures are up 9 points, Dow futures up 65, NASDAQ futures up 30. The DAX in Germany is up 0.33%. The CAC in Paris is down 0.33%. And the FTSE 100 is little changed. 10-year Treasury down 8/32nds, yield 2.52%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.32%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 1.1% or 68 cents to $62.92 a barrel. The euro 1.1208. Against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr to find out more of what's happening around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The House Judiciary Committee is considering action against Attorney General William Barr and the Justice Department. Barr says he is skipping today's committee hearing. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
Not only is Barr snubbing the committee's insistence on cross-examination-style questioning by staff lawyers, the Justice Department is rejecting a subpoena for the full unredacted Mueller report, saying it won't allow the panel to second-guess and reinvestigate the same matters the department has investigated. Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler says he'll try negotiating, but compliance is not optional.
The next step is seeking a contempt citation against the Attorney General.
In a phone call to the Fox Business Network, President Trump praised Barr's appearance before the Republican-led Senate Judiciary Committee, at which Barr repeatedly excused conduct by Trump that the special counsel said could constitute obstruction of justice. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Radio.
Yesterday, before the Senate panel, Barr told Democrat Richard Blumenthal the recently released March 27th letter from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's office. It says that Barr believed that the tone of the letter was, quote, snitty over his portrayal of the Russia probe. Barr says that led to him calling Mueller.
There were notes taken of the call.
May we have those notes?
No.
Why not?
Why should you have them?
Democrats want to call Mueller in for testimony. The likelihood of that is slim to none, especially after Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham gave an emphatic no to reporters.
I'm not going to do any more. Enough already. It's over. If there's any dispute about a conversation, then he'll come. But I'm not going to retry the case. I'm not calling McCann. It is over.
Anti-government protesters in Venezuela clashed with armed forces loyal to President Nicolas Maduro yesterday. Protests were met with tear gas as the U.S.-backed Juan Guaido called for a second day of demonstrations to oust Maduro. A vigil was held on the Charlotte campus of the University of North Carolina last evening for the two students killed and four others wounded when a gunman opened fire on the campus Tuesday. Police say 21-year-old student Riley Howell was killed when he tried to take the gunman down. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, the Islanders games with Carolina have been close. Hurricanes won 1-0 in overtime, then 2-1 last night in Raleigh. It was 2-2 midway through the third period.
Niederreiter, Carolina back out there changing. So Niederreiter, a lone ranger, dumps it in. Leonard cut off by Aho. In front, they score! Justin Williams! And Carolina has a one-goal lead.
CSN the call. The Canes added two empty netters and won 5-2 and now lead the series 3-0, going for a sweep tomorrow. Isles need more offense. Only three goals scored in three games. Dallas beat St. Louis 4-2. That series tied at 2. NBA Portland beat Denver 97-90. They're tied at 1. The good news for the Mets, the old Jacob deGrom. 7 scoreless innings. He allowed only 3 singles. He had given up 14 runs in his previous 3 starts, but like last year, the Mets didn't score any runs for deGrom. Held the 5 hits, and the Reds won 1-0 on a Jose Iglesias home run off Edwin Diaz, the Mets closer, who has now lost 2 games in 3 nights, both due to ninth-inning home runs a day game today. Yankees are off. Their bats were again quiet in a 3-2 loss at Arizona. Aaron Boone on the lack of offense.
These 2 days just haven't been able to get that hit or really mount anything enough offensively. You know, I mean, bottom line is we've pitched well enough, you know, 3 runs back-to-back days and just haven't been able to mount enough against them offensively. And, you know, and that's partly credit to them for being able to hold us down and make pitches in those situations.
Still a good road trip with all the injuries. They went 6-3. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on how Generation Z is changing the consumer landscape. Jim Ellis contributed to the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
They really are different. A lot of people have thought, well, you know, we've seen sort of these sort of demographic groups before. We talk a lot about boomers, about Gen X. So everybody says, oh, this is just another. Well, it's different.
And you can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. It's coming up to 5:38 on Wall Street time for the Tri-State Business Report. Good morning, Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Hi, Nathan. Lyft has lost a court challenge to New York City's minimum wage rule. The rideshare company had asked a New York State judge to block a taxi and limo commission rule that called for drivers to earn at least $17.22 an hour. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy is lashing out against a tax incentive program expanded under former Governor Chris Christie. NJ.com reports Murphy says he's deeply troubled by reports that, among other things, showed more than $1 billion in incentives went to businesses or charities tied to Democratic power broker George Norcross or people in his orbit. A Connecticut state revenue package that rejects much of Governor Ned Lamont's proposed sales tax expansion is supposed to clear the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, but it also includes new or higher taxes on things like alcohol, prepared meals, and capital gains income. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, a House subcommittee has scheduled a hearing on the status of Boeing's grounded 737 MAX.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Shell's quarterly earnings topped analyst estimates on its natural gas business.
I'm Anna Edwards on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following the Brexit talks between Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn as both signal a deal could be in sight.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on WJFK, The Fan in Washington, D.C., we're looking at quarterly results from Under Armour.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Google has introduced controls that will automatically delete a user's location history and activity data.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching, hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio says something like modern monetary theory is coming, whether we like it or not. Debate over the doctrine known as MMT has exploded recently. It says that governments should manage their economies through spending and taxes rather than relying on central banks. In a LinkedIn post, Dalio says policymakers will have to embrace MMT when monetary policy doesn't work. Futures pointed to a higher open once again on Wall Street. S&P futures up nearly 9 points now. Dow futures ahead by 59 points. NASDAQ futures up 29 points. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis of some of this morning's top news, including the latest Fed decision. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are moving higher this morning after the three main gauges fell yesterday when the Federal Reserve pushed back on market expectations that its next move would be a rate cut. Investors are now turning attention to company earnings and the outlook for global trade. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 8 points this morning. Dow futures up 53. NASDAQ futures up 28. The DAX in Germany is up 0.33%. 10-year Treasury down 0.73%. Yield 2.52%. Yield on the 2-year 2.32%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.3% on 82 cents to $62.80 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.9% or $12 to $12.72.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1206 against the dollar. The yen, 111.54. Almost 50 companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today, including broadcaster CBS, Dow, DuPont, and Kellogg. And today we're looking for the weekly report on initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 9:45, it's a Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index and a 10 factory orders and durable goods orders. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Attorney General William Barr told the House Judiciary Committee that he won't show up for a scheduled hearing today about Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler says that the executive branch does not get to dictate the format of the hearing. Cuba is countering White House claims that its forces are propping up President Maduro in Venezuela. It comes as a standoff drags on in Venezuela between Maduro and opposition leader Juan Guaido, who has called for a widespread military uprising. In the NHL playoffs, the Islanders are on the brink of elimination after losing to the Hurricanes 5-2. Carolina leads the series 3-0. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets lost along with the Nationals. The Red Sox down the A's. The Orioles split a doubleheader with the White Sox. The Giants won. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news, including the latest Fed decision. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joins us from our London bureau. And as our opinion editors and writers take a look at the Fed stance, Brian Chapata says that the latest minutes, at least, had all the looks of another dovish surprise, Jen.
That's right. So when the Fed left the benchmark lending rate unchanged, it also dropped the interest rate paid on excess reserves by 5 basis points to 2.35%. This really took traders, but it's really caught traders' eye. But even more importantly was the tweak in the language around inflation relative to the previous meeting. So in March, the statement was that overall inflation has declined and remains near 2%. In May, it was that overall inflation has declined and was running below 2%. So Chapata says this has the appearance of being clearly very dovish, because it's, of course, no secret that stubbornly low inflation is really vexing policymakers. And Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has called it one of the major challenges of our time.
Of course, we have more than just the minutes here. And Chapata writes that looks can be deceiving.
Yeah, and it's worth paying attention to Powell's tone during his press conference. He really chose to strike a decidedly more hawkish tone, at least relative to market expectations. And he made the statement that the Fed's baseline view remains that inflation will return to 2% over time and then be roughly symmetric around our long-term objective. Chapata's point is that this is basically the Fed's conventional thinking, and that if this were a past meeting, it would be little more than a throwaway line. But here we've got bond traders having built up expectations that policymakers would be willing to take unconventional measures to boost inflation. One idea that had particularly taken hold was the idea of an insurance rate cut, which kind of explains why Fed fund futures were pricing in almost a full quarter point cut by year end. Those bets, of course, changed in a hurry after the press conference.
Yeah, so Chapata's thinking maybe that bond traders went too far pricing in a rate cut so soon.
Yeah, his take is that policymakers really do mean it when they say they want to be patient. I mean, you just have to observe how vigilant Powell was at the press conference, dodging questions that tried to get him to define a threshold that would justify lowering rates. So recent commentary from Fed officials and even the language in the FOMC statement was kind of little more than a tease for markets, Chapata says. Ultimately, this sounds like the same old central bank that will dismiss below target inflation as long as the economy is growing and the labor market is strengthening.
All right, let's move on to the latest piece from Lionel Laurent, taking a look at the rising tensions now between the U.S. and Iran, sanctions in place, and Europe caught in the middle.
That's right. So both the U.S. and Iran have been criticizing Brussels, national governments such as France and Germany, for promising to preserve trade with Iran, but also treading softly with the Americans to avoid a full-blown diplomatic crisis. This is, of course, in the wake of renewed sanctions from the Trump administration. Laurent says it would be wrong to dismiss Europe's efforts as completely hopeless. He points to something that probably a lot of listeners haven't heard of before. This is something called INSTEX. It's a special-purpose vehicle that was unveiled by Paris, Berlin, and London in January. It has really bold ambitions. It's going to try to keep trade between Iran and Europe going without relying on cross-border financial transactions, which might fall foul of the U.S.
So how does that work?
It kind of acts like a central clearinghouse, and the idea is that buyers and sellers in Iran and Europe can get their money without making transfers into and out of the Middle East country. Let me give it to you in an incredibly simplified form. So suppose you've got a European trader who wants to buy gas from Iran and a manufacturer who wants to sell aircraft parts. What you do is you get the Europeans to transfer the money between each other and the Iranians to transfer the money between each other, so you don't have any cross-border money flows.
I mean, on its face, though, that sounds like sidestepping sanctions.
Yeah, and, you know, there's certainly a lot of ways to criticize it. Is it practical? Is it wise for Europe to, you know, put this kind of pressure on its key NATO ally? But Laurent's point is just kind of, hang on a minute. This is a work in progress. It's a sketch on paper. But for the countries involved, London, Paris, and Berlin, the unity there really tends to crumble under U.S. pressure, so any kind of public commitment to this kind of vehicle is a success in itself. And it's being taken seriously by parts of the American establishment, who, are, of course, are very well aware of any risks to the dollar's dominance. So Laurent points out it will probably take years for INSTEX to become genuinely viable, but it's serving a political purpose already. It gives Iran an incentive to stay aboard the nuclear deal, and it also reminds the U.S. that sanctions overreach can harm its interests.
Fascinating. Thanks, as always. Bloomberg opinion editor Jennifer Ryan with us from our London bureau. You can read more on these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta says he does not support a change to the federal $7.25 minimum wage, signaling he would advise the president not to sign any bill raising the pay floor. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says it is on pace to complete its review of two interim nuclear waste storage facilities, one in New Mexico, the other in Texas, by the middle of 2020. And the EPA's environmental justice advisors are aligning with corporate interests in a new call for consistency in how the agency approaches the cleanup of toxic waste sites across the country.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story we're watching this morning. Attorney General William Barr defending his handling of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's findings in the Senate yesterday following the release of a letter from Mueller objecting to the Attorney General's misrepresentation of his report. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Fordham Law School professor Andrew Kent.
How, in your opinion, did Barr do in rebutting the criticism that his summary and press conference misrepresented Mueller's report?
You know, my judgment, not so well. I think he had a lot of serious questions to respond to, and his answers, for the most part, were kind of narrow, lawyerly, parsing, you know, kind of really fine-grained, sort of hair-splitting that, you know, to my mind, really didn't answer the many legitimate questions that have been raised about how he had handled both his, you know, the transmission of the report and his public statements about the report.
What struck me was his answer to a question about why he concluded there was no obstruction. He said there was no underlying crime, but Mueller, in his report, disagreed with that, and legal experts disagree with that as well. What's your take?
I agree with everyone except Barr on this. There are obstruction cases on the books where courts have upheld somebody who had motives of embarrassment or shielding a friend from justice, or other kinds of motives for obstructing justice other than you know, shielding themselves from criminal activity. So Barr does seem to have an unduly narrow reading of the obstruction statutes.
And that's Fordham Law School professor Andrew Ken speaking of Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures are up about 9 points this morning. Dow futures up 58. NASDAQ futures up 30. The DAX in Germany is up 0.33%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32nds, yield 2.52%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.32%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.2% or 75 cents to $62.84 a barrel. And COMEX gold down 0.9% or $11.40 to $12.72.80 an ounce. The euro at 1.1203 against the dollar. The yen 111.55. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.